Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI.
The way this started, like I went to lunch with a buddy of mine when I was at this startup in New Jersey, and we went to the mall, and at the mall there was a Lego store, and I'd never been in a Lego store before. In fact, I didn't even know they existed. And I was like, man, we have to go in there. And he's like, oh, you're into Lego? And I'm like, yes. And we went in, and at the back of the store, there's a wall where you could.
You're listening to Chad Collins, the founder of a number of extremely large events. Now, we've had episodes in the past about putting on your own workshops, putting on your own conference with maybe a few hundred, but imagine putting together an event in your space with tens of thousands of people. And not necessarily an event where it's just a bunch of speakers the whole time, but massive amounts of vendors in the space that you're in coming together. Imagine like a Comic Con in San Diego, but for your industry. This is what we're going to talk about today with Chad Collins. And you might be like, well, Pat, that's way too big for what I'm thinking, and it's out of my league. But I want you to hear the story about how Chad got started, why he's going down this direction, and how you could possibly do something similar, and how powerful that can be for your business and your brand and your life, and changing not just your life, but the lives of the attendees of that event too. And so we're going to talk about all that. But first, music, please.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later.
And now your host. He doesn't like foods where the skeleton's on the outside of the animal. You know, like lobster. Pat Flynn.
Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over 1 million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct to consumer pricing, same day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's UPLIFT desk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. What's up, everybody? Welcome to session 347 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Pat Flynn, here to help you make more money, save more time, and help more people too. And today, like I said, we have Chad Collins from chadcollins.me, as well as openworldevents.com. He's going to tell us how this all got started and how you could possibly follow the same route too. I met Chad at an event that I was speaking at in Boise called Craft and Commerce. This is the ConvertKit conference. Chad was speaking on stage and he talked about the story that you're going to hear about. And it was just completely mind-blowing. Plus, it really made me feel like that anybody could do this too. Is it for everybody? Not necessarily. And we'll talk about who this might be for and how it might fit into what you're trying to do. But let's not wait any further. Here's Chad Collins. Let's do this. Hey, what's up, Chad? Thanks for joining us on the SPI podcast. Thanks for being here, man.
You got it, Pat. What's up?
Dude, I want to know how you got into what you do. So before we get into that, tell everybody what you do. What are you known for in this space?
Well, so we have an event production company called Open World. And at the end of the day, we do one thing and we do it well. And that's we produce massive family events.
So define massive family event. Because we've had people come on the show talking about events before, like conferences and little workshops and things like that. But like, tell me about what does this family event look like?
Yeah, I mean, for us, massive really is the size and scope of the event, right? So we do events in like the Lego space. So we have an event called Brickfest Live. And we also have another touring event called Mindfair, which is a Minecraft fan experience. And those events, you know, will go into something like the LA Convention Center, where there's 150,000 square feet and it's between 10 and 20,000 attendees over a weekend.
10 to 20,000 attendees?
Yeah, 10 to 20,000 attendees per weekend. And right now we're running at about 20 or so events every calendar year.
Dude, that's insane. Why? Before we get into how you got into this, like, tell me, what do you enjoy about that? I mean, that just seems super overwhelming to me to manage that many people at an event. Why do you do it?
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, like, we got into this because I'm like a Lego fan, right? As a kid, I was a Lego fan. Mm-hmm. And when I was able to introduce my daughter to Lego, it kind of brought me all the way back. And like, at the end of the day, the reason why is because we want to get into the brains of these kids, and the events we have are also educational at the same time. So we believe that the more time you spend creating, whether it's in Lego or in Minecraft right now, you know, it's wiring your brain a different way. And really, there's an unlimited return on the investment in your time and dollars that you're spending in those two spaces at the moment. So STEM education is a big deal. I mean, you knowing from like your architecture background, I'm sure there was time spent, you know, creating with different toys.
Totally.
that you then applied to your career. And some of my best friends growing up are now in that space as well. And I know that us hanging out and playing like Lego as a kid is what led them to go achieve what they've achieved.
Now, I remember watching your presentation at Craft and Commerce where you introduced to us this world of massive events like what you do. And you made me feel like I could really do it if I really wanted to. I never had even thought about it. Why would you say that this is a business model that people should potentially be interested in?
Because it's the most powerful thing that you can do for your audience. And really, we actually wanted to go to an event. Like my daughter and I started a YouTube channel. And through the growth of the YouTube channel, we wanted to show our audience that they could be in a room of people just as enthusiastic as you are, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanted to go to a Lego event, and the closest one was like several states away. Now, I live in Philadelphia, and it's a big city, and I was surprised that there was nothing in my area. But there were other Lego events happening, right? So the idea was, well, let's create one locally. Let's create one here so people don't have to travel so far to go to one. And when we did that, really the intention in the beginning wasn't to scale and create an event production company. The intention was just to have this one event in our backyard where we can invite, you know, Lego enthusiasts to participate and also open it up to the public. It's not until we saw how there was demand, how we scratched this itch of so many families, that we thought, wow, this is something that we could bring on the road. But to your point of, is this a viable business model? Is this something that I could do? I believe that, you know, you don't have to come out of the gate and have a 20,000 person show, right? You can have an event, whether it's for 15 people or 1500 people or 500 people, and do it well, even if there's other events that are in your space, right? You don't necessarily have to create something that doesn't exist, because the fact that you're creating it and that it's your people that are going to be coming to your event makes it unique enough, right? They're there oftentimes because of who is putting on the event, not necessarily because of the output at the end of the day.
Right. I'd love to understand the difference between something like what you said. It's a show. It's kind of an event like that versus a conference, which most of us are kind of used to, which is the, you know, you go and there's a stage and there's speakers and maybe there's multiple speakers at the same time and maybe there's some networking events at night. How does what you do differ?
Well, we are open, basically it's a public, right? It's a consumer show. So it's open from, you know, 9 or 10 in the morning to 5 or 6 at night. And we bring in and we host different hands-on activities and attractions that families can participate in together. So for something like Lego, for instance, where normally a child is at home and maybe they're playing with their mom or dad or brother or sister, they've never really played with hundreds or thousands of other people at the same time or competed in building challenges. And the same thing with Minecraft. We even have like what we call a learning lab at our Minecraft community event, where Minecraft, there's curriculum now that's being used in school. So we bring in these mentors and they're teaching kids, you know, how they can leverage their experience in Minecraft and start applying that to coding and more advanced things. And these are things, again, that, yes, you could play Minecraft all day at home on your device or on your console. But when you come to an event like this and there's hundreds or thousands of other people, now you're experiencing it with them shoulder to shoulder. Your parents are now being able to understand exactly why their kids are so immersed in this. And, it, you know, the light bulbs are going off in their heads, too.
That's cool. I like that. What's the price point of an event like this usually?
So we range anywhere between, you know, like $19 and then we'll go all the way up to close to $100 depending on the type of experience that you want. So early entry, bundled with, you know, some swag, you know, you're going to pay a higher price point. And then we also have, you know, afternoon entry, where if you just want to come in for like the last half a day of the show, then you're not going to pay for a full price ticket.
Okay. So it is a lot different than a conference in that, number one, the price point definitely lends itself to more of the consumer level. And so I'm imagining somebody in the audience right now listening who may be in the field of, you know, fishing, for example, maybe they have a fishing blog. I mean, why not consider putting together an event where you can bring vendors and people who are interested in the space to come together to learn about things versus a conference where you have like professionals who are coming in and people sitting in, you know, chairs listening all day. This is a completely different feel. And I love that. And before we move on, because I have so many questions about like logistically how that all kind of happens, I would love to know like what were you doing before this, and kind of tell me a little bit more also about your daughter and kind of the YouTube channel and kind of like how did that even begin?
Oh, for sure. So I started my career as an engineer for Lockheed Martin, and so I was in government contracting for a long time, then went to work for a startup in New Jersey. And you know, those two experiences, working for one of the biggest companies in the world and then working for literally like one of the smallest companies in the world, really lended itself for when I decided to launch this and kind of go on my own, to take a lot of what I learned in corporate America and for startup and apply it to this business, right? But like, the way this started, like I went to lunch with a buddy of mine when I was at this startup in New Jersey, and we went to the mall, and at the mall there was a Lego store, and I'd never been in a Lego store before. In fact, I didn't even know they existed. And I was like, man, I was like, we have to go in there. And he's like, oh, you're into Lego? And I'm like, yes. And we went in, and at the back of the store, there's a wall where you could fill a cup with as many Lego bricks as you can. And I used to, like, as a kid, write letters to Lego asking for, like, I want to buy 4,000 of this specific piece, right? It was impossible back then.
Right.
And all they would do is send me back, like, catalogs in the mail. Like, oh, well, you know, here's a catalog of all the new Lego coming out. So to see this and be like, oh, my God, this exists now, was incredible. So I filled up a couple of cups. I brought them home. I showed my daughter. She was 7 years old at the time. And we started creating. The next day I went back to the Lego store, filled more cups, brought them home. And I didn't know this, but she was at home going on her iPad onto YouTube and typing in Lego and watching all of these Lego videos. So the second day when I brought home more Lego, she asked, hey, could we create a YouTube channel all about Lego? And I really didn't know anything about YouTube other than how to consume content. I knew nothing about how to post content. But I said yes. And we literally just leaned her iPad up against the couch and we hit record and we started making videos and posting them up to YouTube. You know, long story short, over 18 months, we posted over 500 videos, accumulated over 12 million wow. views on our channel. And that's kind of what led me, you know, I found you through that process, just learning like learning about monetization of the channel. I'm learning about growth, and yeah, then that's what led us to want to initially create that very first event.
How are you able to produce 500 videos that consistently? Was it kind of like a daily thing for you guys? I'd love to know that process.
It was just about every single day. I would come home. We would, you know, I would either buy a Lego set from like the nearby Toys R Us or mm-hmm. or get some other stuff from the Lego store. I would come home. After dinner, this is always after dinner, we would build the Lego set and then we would film. So Jordan and I would sit in my office at home and we would talk about the Lego that we built. And then after she went to bed, I would go back downstairs and I would edit the video and upload it to YouTube. So it legitimately was like the 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. almost every single day, just getting those videos up, because during that time, I still had, you know, my full-time job. So, and there wasn't the intent to create this event, right? All we were doing is connecting with our audience and we were just doing it consistently for 18 months.
Why? I'm curious, like what kept you going? Cause I can imagine a lot of people, myself included, doing something similar for, you know, a month or so and kind of just like, okay, like this is cool. And then, you know, to do it for that long and have that many videos, I mean, there's got to be some reason why you kept doing it every single day. What was the main reason?
The main reason was family bonding. That was the number one thing. Jordan was super into it. It was like, as soon as I got home from work, like immediately, that's what we're starting to talk about. And it really became like a fun family game. What we learned about YouTube and especially in our space was, especially with toy reviews, like we really like dove in and we're like, all right, what makes a channel pop? And it was being able to get product like before anyone else. If you were able to find that product before anyone else had it or anyone else had a review on it, you delivered it first. Well, now that gave your channel credibility that maybe some of the other channels didn't have. So it really became a game where we started to learn the schedule, and especially of Lego, like when are these brand new sets going to show up in the stores, and then how can we get our hands on them first? And then it was almost like a race, right? So we had like this game where we would get all the new sets and then we'd build them and try and get the videos up. And that's when we really saw our view count and subscriber count grow.
That's so cool. So yeah. I would imagine that at your house, you just have this giant collection of Legos. Like how many would you say you have at this point?
Oh, well, with Brickfest Live and a personal collection, I mean, literally millions and millions of Lego bricks.
That's so cool. So let's talk about the first event. You had this idea to kind of bring the community together, just the local community.
Mm-hmm.
What all was the process of putting that first event together and how many people showed up to that?
Yeah, the first thing we did is as I found a venue, you know, and I found there was an expo center just outside Philadelphia. And I called them and here I am like just someone who wants to do a show with zero event experience and got a in-person meeting with them, which I thought was important because I really wanted them to get to know me and get to know what we were all about. Because oftentimes, like big venues like that, don't want to necessarily take a shot with someone that doesn't have experience, right? Like normally, like a hotel with a couple thousand people is something that a first-time event would do.
Right.
So they had about a 20,000 square foot space that they had available for us. And then the next phone call I made was to some of the local builders and local and some of the big blogs in the space. So the builders, there are clubs, right? Like any niche, there's a club or a group that you can go to. And I went to them and told them that I was thinking about doing this event and would they participate? And really, anyone that we asked, anyone that we had a connection with our channel from, everyone said, yeah, we would absolutely participate. So it was like good sign. Now, no one like threw any money and down or anything like that. It was all verbal.
Had you thrown money down for the event space at this point yet?
I had not thrown money down for the event space. All I had them do is hold the dates. And okay. Then you can get in a venue to hold dates for you for a certain period of time, pencil it in. And until someone else comes and says like they're definitely serious and wants to ink a deal. Mm-hmm. The next phone call was to Lego directly. They at the time had a community event liaison. Because there were these other Lego shows happening, they already had a process for approving new fan-created events in that space. And when I talked to them at the time and laid out that I had already talked to the local group, the local Lego fan groups, I've already talked to a venue, I already have dates penciled in, it really made it easy for them to say yes, because I'd already done all this homework ahead of time. And typically when people have called in the past, it was, I want to create the event. And then they would say, well, go out and get all these things, check all these boxes and then come back to us.
Right.
But we had already had those boxes checked. So once we got that okay, after speaking with Lego, then that gave me confidence to go ahead, sign the agreement and then put, some money down. Interestingly, I was also able to connect with a lot of vendors, right? So these are the people that are going to pay for a space for booth at your show. And I was able to start selling vendor space, selling booths. And that helped with the initial outlay for the venue.
Had you had an event planner or somebody who had experience with events involved yet at this point when getting vendors to come and book booths and that sort of thing?
Yeah, no. This was just leveraging experience.
Wow.
That I had in implementations of different projects in corporate America. And I think like anything, you guys probably talk about this a lot. It's like you need to have the vision of what this is going to look like and feel like at the end, right? What does a successful event look like and feel like? And then work backwards from there. So that's exactly what we did. Like with an event, like there's a date certain. Right. So it's not like you're planning necessarily like a launch where if things don't go right, you can always delay it and push it out. I mean, once you sign that contract with the venue, you know the day that it's going to happen and there's really no moving it. So so we just went backwards from there and we gave ourselves a bunch of time. We had, we had like 8 or 9 months to plan it and start selling tickets and filling the space.
So the vendors are really important because that provides a lot of income for yourself and the event and to pay for the venue and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Is that where a majority of the income comes from? Like I'm curious to know tickets versus vendors in an event like that. Like what percentage is what is like, where does the majority of the income come from?
Yeah. The majority of the income right now is ticket sales. For that first event, it was absolutely ticket sales. And interestingly, we built up all this buzz that this event is coming and we didn't have tickets on sale right away. So it was building up like on our channel and then our vendors were talking about it and the local groups were talking about it that this Lego event is coming, but tickets weren't on sale yet. And then the October before the first show, which was April, first show was April 2014, October 2013, we put tickets on sale. In the first weekend, we moved nearly 5,000 tickets.
What?
Oh yeah, gosh. It was unbelievable. And then we actually stopped. Like I hit the pause button, like no more tickets are going to be sold right now. Because right as a rookie event producer, I had no idea what 5,000 people in a room even looked like. So
wow.
I called the venue back and said, listen, here's where we're at with ticket sales so far. Does the space, you know, I just want to make sure that we can accommodate these people in the space that we rented. And they're like, well, the space that you have would accommodate those people. But if you want to sell more tickets, we have more space available. So I was like, great, let's move into the bigger room. So we moved into a bigger room. It was like closer to 80,000 square feet. And then we were able to put more tickets on sale and end up selling out the event.
Do you at this point know what the program's going to be like? Because I'm just like considering, okay, like let's open up more room to get more people in. But it's like, what are they all going to do when they're there?
Yeah, it was a big deal because yeah, you could open up more room, right? But if you don't like also double or triple the content, then you're going to have a lackluster experience.
Right.
And we made sure that we were going to go find more content. And for us, for that first show, it was the majority of the show was displays, right? People want to come in, they want to see awesome creations made out of Lego. And it was up to us to go find it and then have them come, whether it meant, you know, compensating them in some way to have it come, or just reaching out to other clubs that weren't necessarily local. And then having them travel and come to our event and put displays on. So we had people come in from different countries for that very first show and come display their Lego.
That's amazing. I can imagine like a team from Switzerland or, you know, they're going to build something and they ship pieces of this giant structure with them and they have it in their hotel room, like on the bed or something. Like that's just incredible that you could create that sort of experience. And then people come and they see, and you know, Lego is a spectacle, you know, it's definitely something, to look at. What was the name of that event?
That event, the very first show was called Philly Brickfest. And actually now we run that Philly Brickfest, every year, in April. And it's to the first 2 days are just for like the hardcore Lego fans. So we do have like special programming that's just for them. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we open it up to the public for the event that we call Brickfest Live. And Brickfest Live is the event that now tours nationwide.
And where else have you been?
So Brickfest Live's been all over the United States. We've been to Denver. We've been to New York. We've been to California, you know, Pasadena. We've been to Houston, we've been to Minneapolis. I mean, we've done that show probably close to 50 times.
That's amazing. I want to go back to when you did your first event and go through a little thought experiments and situations with you. So let's say, for example, you're putting on your first event and I'm a vendor that you're interested in having come attend your event, but it's your first time. So for me as a vendor, I'm a little bit like, okay, well, how do I know if this is going to be worth my time, worth my money, worth my team to go out there? What's your pitch to me as a vendor for your first time event?
So I had drafted, a letter that I emailed to a lot of these vendors. Now, remember, like the YouTube channel was our foundation. So, and a bunch of these vendors had sent me things in the mail for Jordan and I to review on our YouTube channel to give them more publicity.
That's awesome.
So the first thing I did is I called the person that I had that best relationship with, a company called Brick Warriors, and he immediately was like, absolutely, like if you do this event, I'm in. So once we got Brick Warriors in, then it was okay, you know. And it's Ryan Haig is the founder of Brick Warriors. So who else do you think would want to participate? And he knew from the other events that he went to who would be the most likely to participate. And then we just kind of, you know, went down that list methodically. I also attended other Lego events before ours to go and get FaceTime with the potential vendors and the potential displayers. So there was an event in Virginia that I attended, and I was able to meet a bunch of these, you know, that would become our clients these vendors that were already displaying and selling, you know, their wares at other Lego shows, and now I'm introducing them another market that they could come into.
That's huge. Okay, so what about the example of I'm an influencer, and yes, you probably at this point with the YouTube channel have already had a built a relationship with a lot of other influencers, but maybe there's like a, you know, big celebrity in this space. I don't know if how would you approach that person to maybe come in and, you know, draw a crowd, obviously, if they were to say yes to make an appearance, or, you know, like I'm imagining, for example, like Comic-Con. This feels very Comic-Con to me. It's like a display and a announcement of new things. And, you know, Comic-Con is huge in San Diego. And I'm sad to say I've been in San Diego for over 20 years and I have yet to go to Comic-Con, which is quite sad. But I'm imagining, like, you know, you want to get a celebrity, but it's your first event. Is that even possible? And if so, like, what is that conversation like?
Yeah, there in the Lego space at the time, there was a channel called The Brick Show that was like the number one YouTube channel, right? Mm-hmm. We and that's who like Jordan first saw. She would show me their videos, and that is really what inspired her to want to do YouTube. And I knew that I had to have a relationship with these guys, with this channel, and it would be great to, of course, have them at our events. And the way I initiated contact with them was, remember we talked about like being the first to get Lego sets, like, or being the first to get something.
Yeah.
We got something before their channel had it. And instead of just like going right to YouTube and putting it on YouTube, I reached out to them and told them I had it and offered to send it to them.
Wow.
So, and then they replied back and said, you know what, like it's okay, like we're gonna find it, but do you have any of these other things, right? So they were cataloging like Lego from like old stuff that also people never had reviews on, mm-hmm. and I happened to have something that they wanted, so we started our relationship that way, where I shipped them some old Lego set that I had that they wanted to do a review on. And then we just stayed in touch. Like we would go to a New York Toy Fair. So Lego would invite certain channels, YouTube channels, to Toy Fair. So we could, you know, get video of all the new Lego sets before anyone else did. And there were only two or three YouTube channels invited. The Brick Show was one of them. We were one of them. And then that's where we were able to meet for the very first time. And that was before we hosted our very first event. So then by the time we were ready to host our event, they were one of the, you know, influencers that I was able to call and say, hey, would you guys come? And of course they did. It's been great.
That's awesome. That's so cool. And then the yep. final thing related to this sort of setup of your first event here is this is a Lego event. You don't own Lego. Lego is another company. Do you, yep. or did you, how did you work that relationship? Because I want to encourage people to explore this as an option for a business model, but I don't want people to just go, all right, guys, I'm going to create an eBay event and I'm just going to throw it and sell tickets. And then all of a sudden eBay, which I know is very strict on how people use their brand, yep. would likely shut them down and even worse. So how do you get around sure. the legal of that?
Yeah. So first off, we did contact Lego and let them know what our intentions were ahead of time. They have not like licensed their IP to us, right? So we are Brickfest Live, an independent produced event.
Okay.
There are things that we are allowed to do. There are things we are not allowed to do, right? We are not allowed to use the Lego logo. We are not allowed to use the Lego minifigure, but we are allowed to create our own like brick built mascot that we call BrickBot. And that is like the face of our brand. So that's a Lego built character that is only associated with Brickfest Live, right?
Cool.
And we are allowed to descriptively say that it's a Lego fan experience. Okay, so that's not part of our name. The Lego trademarked name is not in is not our brand, but we are allowed to use it as a descriptor and go on with that. Now, on the other side, with Mindfair, our Microsoft or Minecraft event, we are under license from Microsoft, so that's an event that we run in official capacity.
Okay. And I'd love to kind of transition into that. Thank you for that, by the way. That's super helpful. Yep. And so obviously reaching out to that company to make sure everything is in alignment and that you're following the rules so that you can keep that relationship moving forward and everybody's happy. That's the most important thing. But you have this other event. So that's for Minecraft. and yes. Minecraft, another huge thing that I am also involved with. Now it's like Lego, but in the digital space in Minecraft, yep. which is really cool. How many years after the first event did you decide to explore this second event?
It was a little more than 2 years after. So the first event was in April of 2014. We actually then produced another show called Young Innovators Fair, which is a science and tech show. That was January of 2016. And that brought in different, science and biology mm-hmm. and all these different innovation cool, worlds. Though. It was so cool. And one of the worlds was called Hacker's Hideout. And in that world, we had a group come in and they wanted to do all this Minecraft stuff. We're like, great. So we had this idea that we wanted to do a Minecraft show. But then at that event in January, we really saw how much enthusiasm there was toward Minecraft, which really gave us the confidence to say, all right, yeah, the next big thing that we're going to do is going to be Mindfair. And then we did that show October 2016 was the very first time we did that. So a little after 2 years after the first show.
That's amazing. And you said that one is indeed sanctioned and licensed through Microsoft.
Yeah.
Did you approach them in a very similar way? Because you didn't have a Minecraft channel, did you?
Right. We didn't have a Minecraft channel. And the first event that we did was not operated under license. It was also operated as an independent production.
Okay.
So what we saw it was interesting in the Minecraft space. So that's where you start talking about like the YouTubers and like the celebrities. There are way more high profile influencers in like video games now, especially and in Minecraft, than there ever were and ever will be probably in the Lego world. Mm-hmm. So we knew that like getting these YouTubers where kids are going to want to have meet and greets with and all that was like a big part of it. So when we did our homework and we looked at, well, are there other events that have happened before in this space? What we found was Microsoft had their own event called MineCon that they did one time a year in one part of the world. And that was it. And it was a really high-end event.
That's the one in the UK, right?
They have had it in the UK. Yeah. They've had it in Anaheim. They've run it like four or five times. And there were these other Minecraft events that had tried, like independently produced Minecraft events that have tried to start, but they were mired by failure. And some events like even sold tickets and then they ended up canceling the event like the week before it happened. So there was like this black cloud over other independently produced Minecraft events. And it's something that we had a battle against. But thankfully, we had this history of all of these other events that we produced. So when we went to approach now a potential vendor or sponsor or YouTuber to participate at Mindfair, right? Even though there was all this stuff that was happening like in the Minecraft community with like events that were non-starters, mm-hmm. we were able to show, well, we have this body of work with BrickFest Live and Young Innovators Fair that gave them the confidence to say yes and want to participate. So it really all comes back down to like that initial foundation that we built, right? No, we do not have a YouTube channel, right? A personal like YouTube channel all about Minecraft, but it's still also riding on the foundation of the YouTube channel we had all about Lego, because that led us to BrickFest Live, which led us to Young Innovators Fair, which enabled us to promote and produce Mindfair.
Love it. I think a lot of people are going to be wanting to start YouTube channels after this conversation.
Yeah.
But as you can tell, like, you know, you grinded for it and you went 500 videos in, and then it kind of unlocks these opportunities through these connections that you're making, which is really great. And I agree with you on the Minecraft stuff. Like, I know that, you know, my son follows a number of YouTubers who initially started as just Minecraft streamers and video YouTubers, and they're huge. I mean, like Dan TDM and Stampy Longnose, and you know, all
Unspeakable,
these
Unspeakable. Yep.
Yeah, like I know these guys, and I feel like I know them a little bit more because they're in my house all the time through the YouTube videos that we watch. But they're so fun, and so do you pay them to come? Do you like? I'm just still curious on the big time celebrities. How you get them to, because they're probably being asked all the time for things like this, and they probably have PR people that you're speaking through. I don't know, like, can you give us some insight on, because I mean, those guys are going to be the ones that sell the tickets, really, because people will come to see them, and you know, that's, I mean, you talked earlier about like having it be an amazing place for a family to come. I mean, that's, I know like Keone, if he saw one of his YouTube favorites, he would just have the best time of his life. I mean, that's that you want them there for those moments. How do you provide those moments with these celebrities who are so in demand?
Yeah. So the thing is, there's a lot of things that you said there, and I think there's a lot of things to consider. So one is we actually won't announce our lineup until almost until like 2 weeks to 30 days before the show. So what that does for us, like we do announce that we are going to have like YouTubers, we are going to have creators at our show, but we're careful in the sense that like we're not leveraging necessarily their brand and their audience to sell tickets. Because if they happen to cancel, and a lot of like these guys are, you know, they're not professionals in all cases. And sometimes their plans change or other opportunities come up. Okay. And we don't want to get ourselves into a position where we're necessarily selling a ticket because one person is going to be there, right? Unlike a Comic-Con. Comic-Con's different, like you mentioned. Comic-Con, oh, the Avengers are going to be there, right? Well, you know the Avengers are going to be there. They are absolutely the reason why people are going to buy tickets. For us, we just want to let folks know, yeah, we're going to have 8 to 15 creators. We're going to announce them as we get closer to the show, but that's not necessarily the reason that they're buying the ticket, okay? Once we announce it, we may sell some more. But it really puts us, the production company, the producer of the event, in the driver's seat, mm-hmm. where we don't necessarily have to compensate a creator, you know, based on their following. What we are able to do with creators, if they do commit early and they do want to promote, we will give them affiliate links, right? So kind of just like any other event, like they could be compensated on the amount of tickets that they sell. So for the most part, we provide, you know, we'll get them to the event and then they're able to monetize by, you know, selling their own merch, for instance, if they have their own t-shirts of their band. Yep. We set them up on a stage and we create their experience at the show and then they're able to monetize the fans and the audience that way.
That's awesome. That's great. And I would imagine as a creator myself, to know that a company is not reaching out to me just to leverage the brand that I've worked so hard to build to sell tickets to their event. Like I'm not the reason you're reaching out to me for the right reasons kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, and it kind of like makes it easy. Like it really makes the conversation easier. Now, if you, the flip side is if you do want to do an event and you want to build it around a certain one or two or three different people, then absolutely. Like, announce them way ahead of time and leverage their audience and have them post on their social channels and give them those ticket links to go sell tickets. We decided to, for this particular event, to do it the other way. The brand Minecraft is big enough where that's what's going to drive the ticket sale, right? Not necessarily the creators that's going to be there.
Dude, this is so insightful. The final topic I want to talk about before we finish up. Yep. And I also want to plug your events and your production company in case people want to learn more about all that stuff. So we'll do that in just a minute. But ticket sales in general, what are you doing for marketing and advertising for more tickets being sold?
Yeah, so we primarily use Facebook for acquiring all of our leads and selling them tickets. And we know that mommy is the CEO of the household, and it is our mission to find as many mommies as we can, whether it be Instagram or Facebook. And we've created this process where, so imagine like when we used to go to concerts, right, as kids, like before the internet, mm-hmm. I call this like the Billy Joel, right? The Billy Joel method. So Billy Joel would say, I'm coming to Philadelphia and tickets are going to go on sale on this day. And you could only get them at Tower Records. And we used to sleep out on the sidewalk and until they, you know, the night before. So when tickets went on sale, we got the best seats.
Right.
Right. So there's a lot of people that are listening. They're like, oh my God, like we used to do the same exact thing. So now how are we able to do that same thing in an online, like how do you do that online? And what we've done is we've created this like pre-sale wait list where we get people to opt in, but they're not opting in for, you know, a how-to guide. They're opting in for the right to be the first to know when tickets go on sale. So we'll run like a 2-week lead acquisition campaign where people are just opting in for the right to know when tickets go on sale. And then we tell them tickets are going to go on sale at, you know, on this day at this time. And then that's when they get the email with their secret link that isn't advertised on the website. They're only getting it because they opted in. Mm-hmm. And that's going to get them access to that first batch of tickets that go on sale at the very best price.
So that's like phase one, right?
It's phase one. And then it's really, it's a cycle of rinse and repeat. So we'll do pre-sale, we'll do super early bird, advanced, and we'll continue that process all the way up until the event.
That's so cool. Thank you for sharing that with us. And
sure.
Before you go, tell us all the good places to go and check out more of what you have going on, including your events and your company and all that.
Yeah. I mean, you could definitely check out openworldevents.com. Then you can see all the productions that we have and where they're going to be coming. If they're coming to a city near you, we'd love to have you. And then for me, you could check out chadcollins.me or look me up on Instagram. That has become my favorite platform.
Dude. Love it, man. Thank you so much for the value today. It's very inspiring, and I think it could potentially open up a lot of big opportunities for people. So I appreciate you, man.
You got it, Pat. It's been fun.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Chad Collins. Again, you can find him in a couple places, chadcollins.me, as well as openworldevents.com. And I'm looking to bring in my family to one of those events very soon. Chad, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you coming on and just everything you're doing, especially to help inspire kids in the realm of education and, you know, Minecraft and all that stuff. Does play a big role in education as well. So keep doing what you're doing. And thank you for the inspiration today. Hey, and really quick, I wanted to talk to you about something that happens every month here. I offer a free training to help you get started with affiliate marketing. Affiliate marketing, for those of you who don't know, is generating an income by recommending other people or other companies' products. And what's really cool is your target audience is already buying a lot of these products. And if you can be the one to let them know about it, that company can offer you a little bit of a kickback as a thank you. I provide this free training every single month. I teach you a number of things such as passive and active ways to create campaigns to sell more of other people's products, plus my secret weapon for affiliate marketing that most people don't do. Now, if this is of interest to you, all you have to do to sign up is go to smartpassiveincome.com/AMM. That's AMM for Affiliate Marketing Masterclass. smartpassiveincome.com/AMM. You register and sign up there, and I'll see you on the call. For those of you that want to get links to all the great things that we talked about today, all you have to do is go to the show notes page at smartpassiveincome.com/session347. Again, smartpassiveincome.com/session347. A big shout out and thank you to everybody who has recently left a review on iTunes and wherever you're listening for the Smart Passive Income podcast. It just means so much to me. I do get notified when I get them in. I have some tools that help me see them no matter what country you're in. So I just, again, thank you so much for all those amazing reviews, and just keep on rocking, guys. I cannot wait to serve you in the next episode. If you are not yet subscribed to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, all you have to do is pull out the device and hit subscribe, and I appreciate you so much for that. Have an amazing day, and I'll see you in the next episode. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at www.smartpassiveincome.com.
Hey, have you ever wondered what makes the difference between a 1 and a 5-star review? Well, turn into Behind the Review, a phenomenal podcast from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Yelp's small business expert, Emily Weshkovic, features a different conversation with a different reviewer or business owner to find out what was really going on, as the title suggests, behind the review. Recently, for example, Emily featured an episode about Aldea Country Eatery, the number 5 spot in the world on Yelp's top 100 places to eat. Emily interviews a wide variety of customers and business owners from a wide variety of industries, tabletop gaming companies, fitness industry, you name it. This is a really fascinating peek into what makes a great customer experience for any business, and you won't want to miss out. So listen to Behind the Review right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.